The reason we only stock D'Addario strings is because D'Addario strings are perfect.
When people come in here, they think that we get them for free or something like that, but we don't. We have no other reason except for dependability and tone.
This content's free, our work isn't. So help us out and like and subscribe, right guys?
Right. Yeah.
Let's go. Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar. We are in East Nashville, Tennessee at the Underdog. Now, if you're not familiar, this is a guitar bar, folks. So if you're in Nashville as a tourist, this is a place to check out. Always got cool gigs going on. So big thanks to Cal for letting us film here. Mm. And today, speaking of guitar dorkery, we got Adam Miller from Australia. Adam, how you doing?
Yeah, man, so good. So good to see you guys outside of a NAMM show.
Yeah, I appreciate the volume that is, you know, you're ripping. It's going to sound great, but yeah, there's a lot less cacophony going on.
Totally.
Well, I want to step into the interview, and I want to ask, what do we hear at the end there? That little like frazzled fairy dust bit.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's definitely stolen from Bill Frisell, for me at least.
Okay.
You've got, essentially it's like looping, using the DL4, that one, so it basically just double speeds whatever you've been playing and throws it up the octave, the way a tape machine would if you speed it up. So
it's like listening to you the whole time as you were playing there, or just
bit? This one I just looped, yeah. I use the mood for something that's listening to me the whole time. So literally the DL4 I kind of use if I need to loop something in time, which isn't very often for me. It's funny, I'm sort of anti the whole looping thing. I kind of want to just play it all myself, but there's certain songs I've been writing and in the last few years that really need that bed to play on, especially if I'm doing a solo show.
So how are you using the looper? Is it kind of a you're kind of building a sandwich, like a rhythm part and then going from there?
Yeah,
or what?
So the way it came about, a lot of these things and that I'm playing was, I did a totally improvised show in an art gallery a couple of years ago and recorded it.
Yeah.
And then released that album. And the premise was, in my head, I just wanted to turn up and just create all new music inspired by the art.
Yeah.
But I did, which was cool. But it was very casual. I knew everyone there. People were talking to me, so I didn't bother listening to it. And then came back to it later, and it was like 9 months later. And just found all this cool music that obviously was me playing, but I'd never heard it. Uh-huh. And I just created it through using different looping and pedals. And then I had to go about, because I released it, recreating it and working out what I'd actually done in the loop on that day in the moment. It was all just spontaneous.
So this is a fun gig. You're actually doing a trio gig with some guys here in town. And then you also are going to, I think, a second set solo, right?
I'm going to do a little bit solo tonight. I'll mainly be with the trio tonight.
But, okay.
Yeah.
But how is your mindset different, philosophically when you're thinking about how you're creating a performance solo guitar? There's obviously a lot more space to fill than with the trio. But gear-wise, what changes or do you make everything work the same?
Kind of work for both, yeah.
Okay.
It's just become one and the same. It used to be totally different, but these days it's, often with a band show, I just won't use the DL4.
Okay.
I create that looping sounds with just the mood pedal, which is a little bit more spontaneous in the way it works live. And yeah, for the most part, it's really my approach to playing that's different. So I, for the most part, I leave out the bass, playing the bass lines with my thumb when I'm with the trio, and I'm trying to play it all when I'm by myself.
Got it.
Yeah.
Another thing we saw recently come up or online, I think just a couple weeks ago, was your Neumann sessions at Studio 606.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was pretty amazing, and it was thrown together very quickly by friends at Neumann, and they really wanted to showcase the binaural mic, the head, the thing that looks like
a head. The next question I had queued up was, what the heck was, okay.
Yeah, so they really wanted to showcase that, and I might be throwing them under the bus a bit, but we...
The bus is backing up.
The bus, yeah, it's there. So we essentially, the first studio was going to be a really small, tight space.
Okay.
And the idea was to record it just with the head and put the trio around it, so you would be basically like sitting in the center of it. Studio 606 is a much more stadium-sized room.
Yeah.
It's designed for stadium drums. And so when we got there, it was like, we're just gonna mic up everything and do it properly. And honestly, that mic became more of a room mic, except for the one acoustic performance I did.
Where, Blanket.
Yeah, no, we did.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, there's one. The song, I Didn't Know What I Would Be,
okay,
is one where it's, you're pretty much just hearing the head because we were gonna use clip-on mics and we forgot to put it on for that take. So that's essentially almost just the head in the room, but it was cool, like even, cause I got to mix it as well. I got to take home the tracks,
oh,
recorded
all right,
through that, you know, super famous Neve console. And like in that recording and the video, it's the same audio, but there's no reverb on the drums. It's literally just the room mics. That's how amazing that room sounds.
Now it might be like camera or framing with what's going on in that shoot, but that head looks so close to you. Was it unnerving to perform with that? The closest front row audience ever.
I wish it was, but obviously then there's film crew behind it, so you're kind of performing to them.
Okay.
But yeah, it was kind of funny.
It's like a mannequin.
Especially
we'll get some video and show it.
Yeah, especially the acoustic one where it's just me in front of it, and it's just like this super bored person just there going.
Are you just trying to wow him the whole time?
Like, yeah, yeah. Hey, man, check this. Yeah, it didn't work. He was expressionless.
And not to put you on the spot, but can you speak in layman's terms what the idea of that head is? Like, what's actually going on there?
The idea is that it, you know, basically has microphones in the ears.
Okay.
Where and the idea is it replicates what you would hear. And it is, it was incredible to hear it in the room. We basically had it hooked up to a set of headphones.
Okay.
And if you put on the headphones and someone just walked around talking, it sounded like they were going behind you just in stereo.
Well,
it literally has that. It's unbelievable. I would love to, you know, spend more time with one. And there's a lot of producers using them in creative ways,
really,
at the moment. But it was, yeah, fascinating how it translates surround to stereo.
I saw the video. I'm like, great, this is an awesome performance. Adam, I'm like, what is that thing doing in the middle of the room?
Yeah, it's just a dummy head.
Yeah. Well, let's actually get into real gear instead of my dummy stuff.
No, that's cool.
Let's talk about this Huber.
Yeah, so this is my latest Nick Huber guitar. I have two of them. And this is, it's essentially called the Adam Miller.
Okay.
It's we designed it over the last sort of 5 years. And it's an amalgamation of the previous Huber I had and several of his other designs.
Okay.
So kind of all thrown into one to make a really easy touring guitar and a very versatile guitar for everything.
Okay. Can you elaborate on some of those?
I will.
Yes, please.
So essentially, it's a mahogany back. It's very chambered, so it's hollowed all the way through here. It's just like one big U route.
Nice.
Then we've got a redwood top. I think mine is one piece on this, and it's kind of ugly and has some sapwood, which I dug.
Character.
Yeah, that was the idea. And it's fairly acoustically loud, just even unplugged. Bolt-on neck, just because I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Bolt-on maple neck, rosewood board. What else do we do that's kind of interesting? We've got two Kloppmann mini humbucker pickups, which is a German company.
All right.
This is the first time I've ever used them, and it was a bit of a last minute decision to put them in, and I actually had intended to replace them, but they're so good. I've changed the pickups in this guitar a few times now, and I keep coming back to these.
Really?
So that's the thing. And it's great to have it quiet, especially for solo shows.
What do you like about the mini hums, or are these ones specifically?
Well, you know, I gravitate towards single coil pickups. I'm not a humbucker guy,
yeah,
but touring, and especially if I'm doing solo performances in the US, you can't deal with a noisy neck pickup. I can't do it. So I kind of like that. These particular pickups just have this really incredible attack to the note and just sort of air around them. They kind of, most people might hear it and think it sounds single coil. But then because I do this thing where I don't use a tone control.
One of those guys.
Yeah. And so this is a 250K pot with no treble bleed or anything. If I wind it back to just like, you know, eight or something, it's like the ultimate tone roll off, and it starts to give it that humbucky, almost like archtop jazz guitar sort of sound really easy.
Can we go there? Let's hear the moods.
So like, you know. So it's still got plenty of air and over the top, but then you just roll that this back just a touch, and then it's. I could do a big band jazz gig or something.
I can hear it really snap through, like just acoustically, as you're strumming over what I'm hearing behind the two rock.
Yeah, and so that's kind of cool. When you're in the room and sort of the volumes I play, you can hear this guitar acoustically in the room as well. Yeah. So it creates a kind of pretty cool vibe. And actually, even in that Neumann Sessions recording, you can hear this guitar acoustically through that head mic. It actually is part of the mix. And so, yeah, and that was part of using a trapeze tailpiece so that it would kind of activate the top a little bit more down here.
Okay.
And nylon saddles as well, which kind of soften the attack of the note just a touch, but I don't know, they have this acoustic quality to them. So I really dig it. I've got it in a few of my guitars now.
Would you say that you're more a semi-hollow guy than a solid body? Because I know you played tellies before.
Yeah, well, the telly I've played is a thin line as well forever.
Okay, yeah.
I think the only solid body guitar I have is a Les Paul that I got when I was 12 years old.
Yeah, and you still got it?
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
What should we know about strings and maybe like tunings on a gig like tonight you'd use?
Yeah, cool. I use 11 to 49. I generally use D'Addario NYXL.
Okay.
Mainly because they've got soldered ends. I don't know, like, so essentially when they wrap them, they then put solder over the top. And it just means I can change it on the day, stretch it quick, it goes into tune. And I usually don't have to tune the whole gig.
Yeah.
It's done. And yeah, my alternate tunings range from none.
Okay. Closed.
So, yeah,
there's
yeah.
no open it's tuning.
Closed.
It's closed.
Yeah, man. Honestly, when I learned to play the guitar when I was very young, I'd come from playing keyboard first.
Oh, all right.
And I just, when I picked up a guitar, the first thing I saw was the keyboard up every string. So if I shift that around, I'm kind of screwed.
Yeah, I bet. I'm sure it'd still be melodic and stuff. Can we move on to another guitar?
Yeah, for sure. Let's do it. So with me here, I have, because I can usually only travel, I can travel with two guitars. You know, this
is that the limit?
Well, this is the ultimate low budget touring, you know. I can travel with as much as I can carry. I could probably pay for more, but I'm so often like on trains and like subways with my gear just to make all the budgets work that sometimes I just borrow guitars from friends. So tonight I'm borrowing this Novo from my friends there. It's a baritone.
Oh,
and
cool.
I played on that album Gallery. There's quite a few songs. At home I have a Mule resonator. It's a solid body resonator, technically.
Okay.
Talking about solid body guitars.
But metalled, right? The body itself?
No, the body is wood.
Oh, all right.
Solid body and then with a resonator cone in
okay.
it. And I have that set up as a baritone.
Got
in
it.
C or B standard with 14 to 64 gauge strings. Okay. Which sounds insane.
So barbed wire, yeah.
But it's basically like playing a set of 11s when you consider the tuning.
Yeah, okay.
It sounds,
that makes sense.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's nice to be able to kind of vary it up a little bit. So,
Rather than ask you about this guitar, maybe because you just picked it up today.
Yeah.
Let's just hear it and how you're using it for the set.
Yeah, cool. So I'll do something cool just to give you an idea of some different pedal ideas. So it'd be like, let's do it. Thank you.
your playing is so rhythmically rich. How did you develop that?
Two things. I started listening to Tommy Emmanuel when I was very young, and then started touring with him when I was not much older. So that history of like sort of the Chet Atkins style, the fingerstyle, and then basically I heard Charlie Hunter, and that just opened up the whole world of kind of grooves and music to me. And it was, it's incredible. So like that is very Charlie influenced, that particular piece, and you know, lots of bass line stuff. And I have one of Charlie's old guitars at home, and I usually play it, which is like 3 bass strings, 4 guitar strings, 2 amps. But I, you know, that's the guitar I, when I get the call to play bass at a wedding, I don't really play it in public because I just sound like a bad version of Charlie.
But if you're going to have two examples or 2 North Stars, those are 2 great ones to have.
Tommy. Especially, yeah, for groove and timing and melody. Yeah, they're the guys.
Yeah. And Tommy's obviously, he's your first native son of Australia, but he lives here, so it's always great when we see Tommy around too.
Yeah,
Tommy's,
exactly.
Tommy's a Nashville favorite as well.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk any more or show any more about this baritone, or should we move on to the acoustic?
Yeah, we can move on to the acoustic or pedals or whatever.
Let's do the acoustic, and then we'll hit amp and pedals.
Okay, cool.
Tell me about this Collins.
All right, this is it's an old friend of mine now. I've had it just under 10 years.
Wow, it's relatively clean still.
Yeah, I look after things. it's amazing. I bought it at a store in Australia. What was the store? Guitar Factory, Gladesville. And it had been sitting on the wall there for a little while and just hadn't moved. It was like amazing that it was just dealing with weather that well. So yeah.
You lowballed them, you got it.
Kind of, yeah. So, and it's been an amazing friend since, and it's super consistent and plays amazing. The pickup system in it is something I've thrown together.
Oh, really?
And so it's a combination of the Seymour Duncan Wavelength Duo,
okay,
which is normally an undersaddle and a microphone, and then I sub out the undersaddle for soundboard transducers, modify the circuit a little bit so they're at a crossover, so you're only hearing the bottom end of them and all the top ends coming from the condenser mic.
How long did it take you to figure that out or work it out?
It's something I've been toying with for years. I worked with a few guitar companies over the years. And just because I've always chased like the most natural acoustic
pickup
sound.
So that's what you're trying to solve, is that?
Yeah, just so that it not only sounds like an acoustic guitar, but also responds like one, which is often the thing I have problems with, that the undersaddle pickup just feels too compressed when you're playing it. Doesn't have the dynamic range.
And then we're going through the Grace here, Alex.
Yeah, and so that just gives me the ability to fine tune EQ. That preamp has huge amounts of headroom and most acoustic pickups fluctuate in their output level very radically and clip. So this handles everything I can throw at it and has so many routing options to get me through shows and
So is that great. You're not running through the pedal board that we'll get here in a second. It's just this.
It's just that. Okay. I will often use a reverb with this as well, and occasionally I will use the Flint for reverb if I'm having problems accessing reverb at a show for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I can keep it in and just let front of house give me reverb back, that's the goal.
Makes sense. Can we hear a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So.
good.
Yeah.
What should we know about for strings on the acoustic?
I generally use 12 to, well, I always use 12 to 53, actually.
Okay.
And D'Addario nickel bronze are the things I've been loving for the past few years.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can we move back to your Huber and finish out the rig here?
Do some pedals, yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Hey everybody, I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So, as many of you know, D'Addario has been a longtime friend of PG, sponsoring Rig Rundowns, and they're a longtime friend of all the players with their Players Circle Rewards. I've been using it for years, and essentially, they will reward you for the gear you buy. Open it up, look inside, and there's a reward number. It's free and easy to sign up for. And as soon as you sign up, you immediately get some reward points just for putting your name in. After a while, you accumulate enough where you can buy more of this fantastic D'Addario gear. So as a Players Circle Rewards member, you get discounts on custom products and merch, you get free shipping, and you get a discount on the gear you're buying with your points or free gear, depending on that. And if you're charitable, you could donate your Players Reward points for musical education. So collect those points, buy the great gear, and let's get back to more rundowns.
All right, before we get into pedals, what should we know about amp?
Yeah, Turok, I've been a Turok player since 2007, actually.
Wow.
I read about them online like in 2000 when they were just called K&M Analog Designs, and managed to finally like go to the factory on my first trip ever to the US and bought one.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of crazy. And obviously, well, not obviously, but I can't travel with an amplifier. Most it's flying around. And so I kind of rely on friends and fans to borrow one. So this one's from, you know, Nashville legend Corey Congilio.
I was just going to guess.
Yeah.
Because he's a Turok devotee too.
Yeah. So, and you know, like I'm pretty happy with any of their models. Like they're more similar than they are different. And they all just, it's about the feel of it when you play it. Like, yes, there's tones and things you can get out of it, but the feel of what it does under your fingers, I actually always equate it to like, and the way I think about even playing electric guitar is I'm always trying to replicate it like an acoustic.
Mm.
So I think about like the amp almost as the soundboard of the guitar and the way to drive the instrument through. So I'm kind of, you know, it's a complete package. If I don't have a Turok, I struggle a little. And
how does that change how you approach thinking that way to EQing the amp than maybe a traditional person that might approach
an
amp? I
think probably the biggest thing I do is I just play with too much bottom end.
Okay.
And that's also from the point of view of like playing bass lines and solo, but I use way more bottom end than most guitar players do, but whatever.
What do you, speaking of, you brought up kind of like your gigs can vary based on like tours, fly-in dates, NAMs, clinics. What do you need out of your gear to feel comfortable to perform at your best? Like, what's the bare kind of the bar?
I think for me, it definitely is usually a guitar that I'm comfortable with.
Okay.
That's kind of the thing. You know, if I can play my guitar, it's great.
Yeah.
But after that, honestly, probably it's just reverb. If I've got like a reverb that feels right, or even like the Flint is just so, it just bounces off the right way, I usually can find I'm pretty comfortable with most things eventually.
Yeah. I feel like because you've played in so many different environments that you've learned to hit the curveball.
Yeah, and look, it's just I don't have the luxury of having everything right every night.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, you kind of take what you can get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of touched on the DL4 Mark II, unless there's something else that you want to talk about
relative
to how you're using it. Let's go through the other four pedals and as you go through, tell me why they'd make the cut, because again, you have to be very, economical in how you're rolling.
Yeah, exactly. And it's obviously small and everything is kind of versatile as well.
Okay.
So I will change things, settings through the show
as
well. So we'll start off with I'm kind of so crazy. Cables are a big thing to me as well.
Okay.
So I'm using the Vemram cables at the moment. I've been using them for maybe 2 or 3 years now and they've been great. I just feel my sound has been more consistent than ever using those. And then first we go into the Vemram Janray.
Okay.
And it's like low gain or cleanish boost.
All right.
So essentially like, it can be clean if I hold back a bit. And And then with the gain down on these, they really are very clean. So maybe tonight with the baritone, because it's a little bit lower output than this,
yeah,
I might actually run it clean and just goose the volume up a bit.
Okay.
Just to
wake it up.
Yeah, to give it, get it to the volume of this guitar. So I'll kind of go back and forth with that.
How would you change, assuming you're using this guitar the whole time, how would you use the set or change the settings?
The only thing I would usually do with the Gen Ray is maybe increase the gain if I kind of was wanting to get like a Stevie Ray Mayer-ish sort of sound. So I might go like, you know. So that's really just with the gain difference between, what was it, under 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock.
Yeah. Right on.
Yeah. So.
And so what do we got left here?
Next, we've got another Japanese pedal, the Free the Tone SOV2.
All right.
And this is really a feel pedal. It's like amazing how, once again, just low gain. It kind of doesn't sound that much different, but. I feel under my fingers, I've got more, it will get more driven if I play harder, but stay cleaner when I play softer.
Yeah.
I guess that's slightly
increases
more compressed.
Almost like more dynamic. Yeah.
Versus. And then with this one, I will wind it right up and it does a fuzz.
Okay, let's hear
it. So it's, we get it all the way there, gain all the way up, turn the tone up a little bit, and we get. Drive it with the Gen Ray. And then often how I'll use it is in a show, which we can get to the mood, is add a low octave with the mood. And
okay.
So now I get this.
That sounds so fun. I don't know why you turn off the three of them.
yeah, exactly. It's a vibe.
And so earlier you were kind of using the mood as a bed too. Are there any other ways you use it?
So there's, the mood obviously is a complex pedal.
Yeah, it's smarter than I am.
And I use three different presets when I'm using it. So the first one is, one side of it is just a simple delay. And then the right side is a constantly listening looper that plays whatever I've just played for the last like 5 seconds in reverse.
Okay.
So that's what I was doing with the baritone. So I'll do something like. And then it's just going.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it versus like the DL4, because you've got to like tap multiple times to get that happening, whereas this can be much more integrated into the performance.
You're doing a lot already, so like less kicking is better.
Yeah, it's just like okay, well I need something behind me for a second now, and we're playing.
Yeah.
And then it's there. Then preset two is a reverse delay on one side. And then the looping side of it becomes an arpeggiating loop through a digital clock.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of, you know, I've written a couple of songs, which is actually part of the feature of the way the melody flows. Or if I'm in the middle of a solo towards the end of a show and I'm cooking and I'm like, I cannot play any faster or I don't want to, I'll do something like along the lines of.
Just another bag of tricks.
Yeah, just throw it that way for a second.
Yeah,
it's cool. And then preset three is the octava, which is. So, a lot of power just with running down and flicking a switch quickly.
Yeah, that thing is versatile, just like the rest of their stuff.
It's
there's many, many functions.
This is the only one I've ever, jumped into, but okay. It's cool. Yeah.
Well, the Flynn is, people seen these on rundowns a lot, but how are you using it?
Yeah, as a reverb, it's just, even though I've got reverb in the Turok, I just find this, like I said, it's more consistent. I know how it's gonna bounce off the note and sustain out, and that's really important to me. Like, I find without it, although there's still a little reverb on the amp now, but just, the way it bounces is awesome.
And what setting is it on?
Like, that is on the 70s, the plate.
Okay.
Yeah, which I just found is actually the closest to my classic reverb Turok at home.
Mm.
Even though it's a spring.
Yeah.
This, sounds so close in these settings to my classic reverb.
Are you ever using the left side, the trem?
Yeah, so just really basic trem. I pretty much just use this one slow speed, like, for everything. That's my thing.
It's moody.
Yeah, and so it's, that just kind of sits there. The other thing I'll use on this is the harmonic trem, either to, like, cop the fake Mills thing, Blake Mills.
Yeah.
Where you've got the, or I will actually wind it up again and get my, like, kind of a Leslie rotary thing going.
Yeah. Well, dude, I got a pair of questions for you. I know that you're bouncing between fingerstyle and pick. What pick are you using?
I use a Dunlop Primetone 308.
Okay.
So it's fat, but it sounds really close to my fingers, which is the cool thing. So if I play something like, or if I go pick, finger, it's got a similar level of attack and it just sounds fat. And I found them.
Yeah, how did you land there?
A friend gave one to me years ago. I was using these Vegan picks from, I can't remember where they're from. Anyway, like a Gypsy Jazz pick, which was almost identical, but the material in this was just a softer attack and really beautiful. So I've been on these for 14 years or something, and it's the only style of pick I use. It's like one of those things to stop choices.
Yeah.
It's like, that's my pick.
Yeah.
Done.
One less thing to quest after.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other question I had was, I know that you do a lot of clinics and you do a lot of stuff, I know that you had, I don't know if you still are, with Truefire. So you do a lot of educational stuff, teaching, and then clinics. What's a common theme or a common question that comes up, or even like a response that you give that you find yourself expressing to players, to give us a little cheat sheet, because we all want to play like Adam Miller.
Well, usually most people come to me now with, like, I guess, harmonic questions, like how to play over changes and how to make things approachable. And
so to that, in a 30-second response, honestly, how would you say that to that?
The thing is, like, to learn to play kind of like jazz loosely, which I play jazz loosely, is that it's about learning songs. And so everything just becomes part of your vocabulary.
Okay.
So you've got to, like, slowly kick it off. So, you know, you learn one song. Let's say, you know, I usually start most people with Autumn Leaves or Blue Bossa.
Okay.
That have very minimal changes. But, you know, you'll learn simple things like 2-5-1s and just changing your key for a second. Then you'll learn the next song and you'll go, oh, wait, that's got that same thing that I learned in Blue Bossa, but now it's got this thing. And you just have to slowly build it up, but it's got to be based on learning songs. Like, it's really hard to go, I'm going to just learn all the modes now.
Yeah.
But no idea how to apply it. It's like you learn everything as you need it for the song, and then everything makes more sense. That's how I did it. Like, it was basically, I'd get a gig when I was young, and I'd be like, oh, how do I play over this? And I'd just work on that song, and then, it would just build over time.
Grow on that.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, I really appreciate your time. And if people want to track on what you're doing and what's coming up for you in the future, where should they go online?
It's adammiller.com.au, right. Extra bit, or just Adam Miller into Google. And most of my handles are Adam Miller Guitar on most things. Yeah.
Well, could I have you play us out? Because your playing is so wonderful and we'd love to hear it. So
cool.
I'll get out of your hair. And thanks so much. Everyone, stay safe. Keep rocking. And thanks for watching.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay.